Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Tom Trones, co-founder and chief product officer for Minuendo Lossless Earplugs. But first of all, I think we've mentioned many times before that there's only four countries that don't pay royalties to artists when they get radio airplay, and that's Iran, North Korea, China, and the United States. Well, this has been a problem for a long time, and a lot of change that has come up numerous times, but has always been defeated by the lobbying of the NAB. That being said, this problem actually becomes wider than just the United States. European countries do pay royalties to artists that get radio play, but they use the fact that there are no royalties in the United States as an excuse not to pay. So what happens to the money? Well, countries like France collect the royalties and then either divert them to local artists or to local cultural programs. That said, the European Court of Justice has recently ruled that all artists should be paid regardless. All of this can change instantly, though, if the American Music Fairness Act in the United States is passed. This is a bipartisan bill that's now been approved by the House Judiciary Committee. The Senate introduced its own version of the bill in September. Now, you'd hope one of these would pass, but as always, there's really strong opposition by the broadcasters and the NAB. Just to be clear, artists do get paid for streaming and satellite radio, and songwriters get paid for radio airplay, but artists don't. This bill could solve all that, but it needs to be approved by both the House and the Senate and then signed by the president before it becomes a law. In general, though, this is a great idea, but it may be too little too late, and in the end, is only going to benefit the top 1% who manage to get that radio airplay. If you have any comments or questions, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Also, I'm pleased to announce that the fifth edition of my Mixing Engineer's Handbook is now available. It's totally updated and includes new sections on mixing and immersive audio, self-mastering, new mixer interviews, and much more. Get your copy at a special discounted price at bobbyosinski.com/handbook. That's bobbyosinski.com/handbook. You can also find it on Amazon and Apple Books. And remember, you can learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. Now, the role of assistant engineers has changed over the years. And actually, today, it's changed a lot. If we go back to the way assistants started, it was usually in a commercial studio, and on the basic level, it involved them purchasing food for the session, prepping the room for the day, and then included things like setting up headphones and mic stands, microphones, making a pot of coffee, creating track lists and cue lists, and even back in the day, getting media together like tape and DATs and cassettes, and then labeling boxes and keeping track of all the resources so that can be used for invoicing later. Today, there are actually two types of assistants, those that work with the producer and those who work for studios, either as full-time employees or on a freelance basis. In general, the role of assistant involves a large amount of computer literacy and equipment knowledge in both tracking and mixing sessions. Tracking sessions are pretty much the same because we're talking about setting up the gear, and even though the gear might have changed, the actual setup hasn't. What has changed, though, is during the session, the assistant may be involved in clip gaining stems, or tuning, or resolving timing issues, or declicking bad edits, because this is actually one of the elements that home studios overlook frequently. It could also involve converting session types, removing pops, fixing crossfades, and finding missing parts or plugins on the material that's received. In some cases, it could be adding a selection of samples to the track for the engineer to decide what they're going to use and what they're not. There are some basics that haven't changed, though, regardless of the time, regardless of where you're at in the studio. A good assistant knows when it's time to be in the room, knows when not to say a word, doesn't speak unless asked, and never offers advice. Being an assistant is still a great way to work your way up in the music business, but you have to follow the unwritten rules first. My guest this week is Tom Trones, co-founder and chief product officer for Minuendo Lossless Earplugs. Minuendo earplugs can be manually adjusted to 7 to 25 dB with no loss in sound quality. Besides being a musician and audio engineer, Tom has worked for a number of companies as an acoustics engineer. After working as a mixer at a number of festivals, he discovered the need for earplugs as he was asked to raise the sound level ever louder. Learning about the limitations of hearing protection that was on the market led to the development of an earplug that keeps the natural flat frequency response while the attention is easily adjustable. During the interview, we spoke about playing an 8-string guitar, the difference between music and industrial earplugs, the different government standards for hearing protection, how your ear canal changes over time, and much more. I spoke with Tom from his home in Oslo via Zoom. You're definitely a guitar player because I can see all the guitars in the background. Let's talk about how you got into the music business.
Yeah. So I started playing piano as a kid, and then I found the guitar as I grew into adolescence, and that, you know, took over. And I went to music school and started studying music technology. And, you know, I always found the intersection of the technical side of sound and music and the creative side of it very fascinating. So I went into music technology, and then further did a full master's of science degree in acoustics and signal processing while I was working as a producer. So, you know, finding the balance and the synergies between the technical and the creative aspects has been a common theme in my life and career.
So you did live sound too, right?
Yes. Nothing huge. You know, I dabbled in a little bit of everything that has to do with audio technical stuff. So I did, you know, festivals, medium size to small gigs and festivals for some years. And that gave me some experience in that. But I never did anything like stadiums or thousands of people. So it never reached like the full potential of professionalism. But I got a taste of what that lifestyle is about, at least.
And then I saw that you worked at Cisco for a long time.
Yeah. So this Norwegian company called Tamberg was the leader in video conferencing throughout the 90s and 2000s, based here in Norway. And they got acquired by Cisco. So that's how I got into that system. And then I started as an acoustics engineer doing software programming of, you know, noise reduction and these kind of things. And then I have kind of found my way within the company to do more of brand management and the sound design for video devices. So, you know, ringtones and UX sounds and these kind of things.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention, I took a class on community safety, and it was done in a fire station near here and in their conference room. They had big monitors all over, and they were Tamberg.
Oh, interesting.
For conferencing.
Yeah.
But Tamberg also made tape machines, I remember, back way back when.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's based off the same name, but the company has been through so many restructurings over the decades. It went into like a day part of it, and they made TVs at some point. So it's been lots of kind of subdivisions of that company. And I'm not sure it even exists any longer as any of them any longer. But I think that the video conferencing part of it turned out to be the biggest before it was acquired by the Cisco, the big American Silicon Valley giant.
Yeah. Before we get into the main thing we want to talk about today, I have to ask you about this. I saw a post from you about an 8-string guitar.
Yeah. I have it behind me.
How's that working out?
I haven't played it too much, to be honest. It's a little bit much for me, but I like the, it's a good reason to expand upon the collection when there's a hole, a use case hole.
That's a big hole there.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting to noodle around with, but I haven't been any situations where I've had the use for it live or in recording yet, but that may still come. And I guess it was more driven also by my kind of passion for upscaling things. So finding this kind of was sold as a decoration instrument at Taman, then I used that as a way to practice my luthier skills and setting it up and doing fret levels and pickup changes and routing, etc. So if I fail, then it's not a big deal, but it turned out pretty good. So I put some life back into it. I'm happy about that.
Okay, so let's talk about innuendo and actually hearing protection in general. So, what was the inspiration for all this?
Yeah, personally, I've been quite diligent in my use of hearing protection ever since I started to play in a band. When I was 16, 17, we were in this really small basement, unisolated or insulated. It was super cold in the winter here in Norway, and we were sitting really tight next to each other. And the drummer, he was he's really good, but he was kind of brute force-ish with his cymbals and this kind of really heavy metal, and I had my Marshall amp literally a foot away from my ear, and I just knew then that I needed to do something. So the use case was so extreme that it prompted me to get the custom molded earplugs with 25 dB filters in quite early, and I think I've kept them ever since, and had a I'm always the guy at discotheques that puts toilet paper in my ears if I forgot to wear bring my plugs along with me. So I've always been that kind of guy, and then the opportunity showed up to commercialize some research that had been going on in Trondheim in Norway for about 3 years, where they had developed this very cool membrane technology that could be applied for earplugs. So then three others and myself founded the company 4 years ago.
What's unique about them is the fact that you can vary the amount of isolation that you're getting.
Yes, so the ability to adjust the volume as well as keeping the frequency response flat to keep the sound natural is unique, and that's why so much research was needed, so funded by the Norwegian government, etc. And then it's been our mission to commercialize this technology over the last 4 years, and now that has manifested in two products: the one for musicians and concert goers and music lovers. The second part is more towards industrial workers and more high noise situations at work.
How does it differ from the first product?
It has much more electronics built in, so it's a smart alert earplug. So it will have active noise monitoring and alert you whenever you are in a dangerous sound environment, and report through a cloud solution if you need to adjust in any way, either to the environment or the way that the user is wearing it or something like that.
One of the things I liked about your hearing protectors is the fact that there are different, I don't know what you call them, different tips to fit different ear canals. And that was important for me because I've gone through, I don't know how many different hearing protectors and IEMs and everything like that, custom molded and everything. And I have an ear canal where they all seem to fall out, or most of them anyway. Innuendos were, I was able to find something that worked fairly easily, which I was pleased about.
You know, it was really important for us to, since it's a very premium product, we wanted to make the threshold very low to try it out, so you can You can try them and send them back if you don't get a good fit. And then we have 11 different fits of various tips or fit tips of various materials and sizes that fit about like over 99.5% of people. Some people do have, very abnormal sized ear canals, and then a custom mold would be a good solution. But in reality, a lot of people are getting great fit. So we've sold a lot of product now, and the feedback that we get from people that struggle with finding good fit and our generous return policy is really a testament to how well the selection fits really most ears.
How long did it take to develop the product?
So it took about 2.5 years from the company started to it was on the market, and then the additional time and research before that, which was about 3 years, I believe. So it takes some time and effort, and everything has to be certified as hearing protections. And there's different standards in the EU and in the US, so you have to go through different agencies there. So there's a lot of red tape to go through in order to get a certified hearing protection.
I had no idea that that was the case. So you can't just call something a hearing protector.
No, there's quite strict regulations on it, and since we're a very innovative product, some of these standards aren't not necessarily built for the adjustability of a hearing protection, because you can have them quite open. So they're basically just certified in the closed position, because you're able to open them if you like. And that's one of the unique things about our earplugs as well, is that they're only about 7 dB attenuating. So that almost feels like you have nothing in your ears when it's in the open position, and then you can adjust to have more attenuation if it's a very loud environment. But a lot of times you want to be able to communicate, or between songs at a concert, for example, it's still quite loud, but you want to just have a little bit of a lid on it. And I've found that quite useful myself when I've been testing at concerts, that and feedback from classical musicians that aren't exposed to extreme noise, but just want a little bit of taking that harshness away.
I'm glad you went there, because I didn't realize until recently that orchestral musicians, especially string players, they have high rates of hearing loss,
Yeah.
maybe more so than rock musicians.
Well, it's definitely some people in the I think most in the orchestras are exposed to potentially hazardous sound levels, and some of the instrument groups are worse than others. The violinist and the violist, they have this asymmetric sound, so that ear closest to the instrument is much more exposed, so maybe 10 dB more exposed than the other one. And people sitting right in front of the trumpets, for example, maybe are more exposed, and the percussionist may have a very large amount of peak or transient sounds in relation to the other instruments. So there are different challenges for them, but in all, symphony orchestras really are quite susceptible to noise-induced hearing loss. Although we tried not to use the word noise when speaking about new music, but most of the legislation uses that terminology. That's why we use both
Yeah.
when talking about music and sound in general.
One of the things I noticed as I get older as a player, and I'd be playing with drummers, that they all started to wear some sort of hearing protection, even if it was just foam in their ears.
Yeah.
And this is like a loud rock drummer, and of course the heavier the hitter, the more it was necessary. But it was also necessary for everybody else, on
Yeah.
stage to do that. I bet, this is great for most drummers.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes the friendly fire can be the worst. If you're bending down next to a drum kit and suddenly the sound checks of the cymbals starts, and it comes, you're unaware that that usually has a much worse effect because the drummers, they know when they're going to hit. So in some ways that prepares the ear for what is coming, what they know is coming. So actually for drummers, we see kind of even less hearing damage than one would expect, although there is quite a lot, but less than one would expect based on the sound levels, just because, they know that the sound is coming. They're not usually surprised, but maybe the drum tech or the guy rigging the lights above it might be more, even more exposed.
Okay, well, that then means that there's somehow the ear is somehow compensating. If it knows it's coming, it compensates for the level.
I think so. I mean, there are some muscles in the middle ear that can constrict the eardrum, and some of the kind of bony transfer, in the middle ear, and that kind of helps, but it doesn't work in indefinitely. It has some kind of time constriction to it. So, but there are some mechanisms that can help. If there's an expectation of when it's coming, and it has a latency of a few hundred milliseconds, so it doesn't have time to react if you don't know it's coming or if it's a very, very short and transient sound.
I was reading somewhere, and it might have been on an article that you wrote about how the ear canal actually changes, first of all, as you get older, but which you'd expect, but also just the way you're feeling, your health. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, I'm not aware about just, how you're feeling, but if you increase your weight, for example, if you go up and down in weight, then you can find that, for example, custom molds stop fitting as well any longer. And when you get older, then things change with your anatomy, and then that happens to your ear canal as well. So it's not really not as stable thing as you would think. So having earplugs, our tips, they have some give. So even just chewing and singing along to something, the foam earplugs and the silicone will adapt, while custom molds usually, or at least before, were quite stiff material. And then I was always bothered, mine, popping in and out of the seal, and you can find that as you grow older or you change weight as well, that suddenly they won't fit as well any longer.
Manufacturers that do hearing aids, you would think that they would be, of course, it's hearing amplification at that point, but you would think that they would be people that would get into hearing protection since they.
Yeah, and there are some overlap there, and I think there is some trends in the hearing aid industries because these are huge companies. They're known as the Big Five. There's a handful that are global producers of hearing aids, and they have reached into more of the commercial non-health related aspects also. So maybe, true wireless headsets, or they're seeing that the changed legislation in the US means that you can get over the counter without going to a doctor that will have some, light amplification. If you maybe, I'm not aware of exactly about the Apple AirPods, but I think they might have some active hear through or maybe some compensation. Certainly there are alternatives that provide that. And for some that have maybe just a mild hearing loss, that might be enough for them. So there are some trends in that direction that makes the hearing aid companies be more interested in these related areas, but not necessarily in their main business area.
I have a number of friends that are playing their late 50s, 60s, and they use hearing aids. And there used to be a stigma with it, and that's no longer the case. I mean, even Steve Lukather wears hearing aids, when you have someone like that, it kind of tells you that, well, maybe that's okay. Maybe it works all right.
He's been quite outspoken about it. I think that's great for breaking down stigma as well. How has that been for you? You know, you've been exposed to no loud sound throughout your career, and have you felt some degradation on some frequency, or has that bothered you in any way?
Yeah, I have tinnitus, first of all, and it was from my early days of gigging, and especially I was always on one side of the stage. I was on the left side, so the drummer was, so this ear got it a lot.
Yeah.
And then, my high end has gone away, but I've learned to compensate. I've been very careful over the last 20 years in the studio, very careful, except for once. And it was with the very famous engineer. I was producing a record, and a very famous engineer was tracking for me. And I walked in the control room, and it was so loud, I thought I was going to vomit. And this was normal for him. And I thought to myself, I will never get used to this. But I did, And I wore the, hearing protection, and it was only a week or so of tracking, so it wasn't long, but I was wearing hearing protection after that first day. It was like, oh, this is way too loud. And it was just normal for him.
Yeah, I mean, fatigue of the ear is a real thing. So if, when I've been mi mixing for hours, maybe the sound tends to creep up a little bit as the fatigue kicks in, and then when I take a break, everything's a bit mushy.
Yeah.
And if you don't take these kind of breaks, then your reference points will be move away from the ideal as well. So I think having a good awareness around these things will make your mixes more consistent as well. And the ear itself is actually more linear when it's not so loud, when it's in kind of its optimal working area. When it gets really loud, the ear itself starts to distort on some levels. You're losing some of that dynamic range that you're used to in the more normal range of hearing. And I think that can be a quite profound awareness to have as an engineer. Even wearing earplugs at a concert can make it sound better because it's in a more dynamic area of the ear rather than earplugs. Oh, they always just ruin the experience. I'm just gonna enjoy the moment and have it loud. I can really appreciate that sense and that feeling. Yeah, I've experienced that as well, that often it can sound better with earplugs if you have good ones.
I was just at a Roger Waters concert.
Yeah.
That's what
Okay.
happened, where it was excessively loud, and I put the earplugs in, and it was better. There was dynamic range. It felt like there was dynamic range where there was none before, just a constant blare.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think that goes in line a little bit with, our vision of the company. We don't want to kind of wag our fingers and say, oh, if you don't wear hearing protection, you will be deaf by 4 years old. We want to make this you can enjoy life without the compromise. You can have it both ways. You can protect yourself and enjoy yourself. And have this kind of positive approach to prevention rather than this finger wagging approach.
What's one thing that people don't know or don't realize, or one thing you wish they knew about hearing protection?
I think thinking of it as an investment in yourself, if you're a working musician, do you want to work a full career, then that should motivate you to protect early. And if you're paying $150 or something for a good pair of earplugs, that's a very small cost compared to whatever instruments or other gear you have, but it's protecting your number one asset, which is your hearing. Whenever you're a musician or working in studios or live music, anything like that. So taking that investment, but I think the you're so used to the expensive earplugs being, $20 rather than, these foam earplugs. And there's so much positive joy of experiences that you're missing out by just using foam ones when you're, pressed.
But see, I think that's the problem in that most musicians, especially, are exposed to those foam earplugs. And as a result, they're negative about it. It's like, oh, yeah, it does the job, but I hate the way everything sounds. And then it's really hard for them to think, well, wait, there's more possible.
I think some people are turned off also by maybe having one negative experience with some true wireless earphones or something like that. Maybe they just come with one or two tips that don't really fit. It's kind of big, so it rubs their ear. Maybe it's a little bit heavy, so that leaves them with the sensation that oh, I don't want anything in my ears, and that makes them not want to try, better alternatives that might be more comfortable.
One of the things about Minuendo earplugs is the fact that you thought it through about how you can keep from losing them with the magnets and everything. It's brilliant.
I mean, I've lost my custom molds quite a few times on the concert at a concert in like a mosh pit or something like that. And miraculously, I've found them. But we hear so many stories about people losing their earplugs that we created this magnet snap and the optional leash that you can have around your neck. So that really helps reduce the chance of losing them at least. And it's nice to, always have them ready around your neck.
Okay, Tom, last question. On this journey with your company that you started, what's the best piece of advice that maybe someone gave to you or you learned along the way?
I'm not the biggest kind of risk takers. I'm maybe not your typical entrepreneur. I'm kind of this engineering approach. I like the comforts at home, and all the four of us that started the companies, we have families and mortgages and responsibilities. So I think having the startup scene in Norway, that where you don't have to bootstrap it and do it in your garage on your free time for many years, doing it professional and together with investors, that's really been, key to having a good work-life balance in the process of starting a company and making hardware in this or physical products in this day and age is really tough, especially in high cost countries like ours. But to have high quality, there's a necessity to keep things quite local, to have control of the whole value chain. So that's at least one thing that I've appreciated, if not learned.
You can find out more about Minuendo earplugs at minuendo.com. That's Minuendo, Minuendo. That's Minuendo.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Remember that you can learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. To listen to the episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.